This is March 1st, 1978, and this is the second part, or the other side of the tape. And I'm talking to Jake Briegel, and we're going to talk about some things. We listened to the first part over again, and we're going to talk about some things that maybe we should have talked about, and then we're going to go on. Okay, one of the things you mentioned is why your grandparents that came from Germany came to America.
Well, the younger people, they had to go in the army. When they got become 21 years old, they had to go in the army and stay a year. They got a dollar a month or something. And they left Germany to get away from that. And then this was a new country, and they wanted to see that. They wanted to see what it was all about, because it was crowded in Germany at that time. And then, I don't think, I think the army was really running the country then, and they didn't like that, so that's the reason they came, the main reason they said that I heard through the grapevine from, so there wasn't too many of them left, the reason they left.
Do you remember specifically who you heard this from?
No.
What about your mother's family? Do you know where they came from before they came to Missouri?
I think they came from Tennessee, but I'm not sure. But I don't know where they come from originally. I mean, what country they came from.
But they came from some other part of the United States?
Yeah, they come from some other part of the United States, to Missouri. The Missouri, that part of Missouri was wild. There wasn't too many people there, out in that country there. Remember I told you they fattened the land from the government and built their log house and stuff. They were just wilderness. There wasn't nothing there.
Okay, you described Hickory and Trenton somewhat, but you didn't really describe Jamesport. And we've got this picture of Jamesport. What kind of a place was Jamesport?
Well, it was on the order of Hickory, only it was larger. Because Jamesport, the country surrounding Jamesport didn't have so much timber. It was prairie country, and there was a lot of open country, and they grew wheat and cattle, and wasn't confined to just corn and hogs. They grew corn and hogs too, but where I come from, there was a lot of the country was full of timber, and there wasn't near as many people around the town. And then there wasn't a very close town on the other side of it. So it was a pretty good-sized town.
Did it have more stores?
Oh, yeah, more stores and businesses and houses. People lived there. But they didn't have any industry.
They had a theater
and a drugstore and things that they didn't have in Hickory. But the theaters then, they had, I don't know what, like Klieg lights, that they showed that they run the movies with. They had a generator, and they generated this thing and used that to get the picture on the screen.
Did they have a theater with actors in it? Live actors or vaudeville or anything?
I don't remember about that. They might have had, but the movies was wasn't too much. And they, Oscar Curtis had an outfit like that, and he used to go to different places and show them. He showed them in Hickory, in the hall over the store where the WOW had their meetings.
Okay, that brings up the point. When I asked you if your parents belonged to any clubs, you said no. And I asked you about the Woodmen of the World, and maybe you'd like to change your mind.
Well, I didn't think of the Woodmen of the World as a club, and I still don't, because it was a way to sell insurance. And they had this club just to hold people together and keep them in insurance. That was to me, it was a racket to sell insurance. And I don't know whether that's true or not, but that's what I always thought.
And your father belonged to it?
Yeah.
And where was their hall?
It was over at our store. We had a, they had a hall over the store where we had a store in Hickory. And they rented that out to, they had dances, square dances there. And in the summertime, they'd be, shows come through the country. Kind of like a Punch and Judy. They'd be maybe two or three people in the group, and they, it was a kind of a carnival deal. And they'd rent that hall, use that.
Were there any other groups that pretended to be clubs that met there?
No, not that I know of.
Was there a Grange or anything like that?
No. There was no organization for the farmers or nothing like that. They eventually got a, just some of the guys got together, and when they'd go to ship hogs, instead of selling them to somebody, there was guys that bought cattle and hogs and shipped them to Kansas City. They'd put them, they'd weigh them, and I don't know how they kept track of them, but they had some way of keeping track of them, and they'd enough of them would go together to get a carload, and they'd ship them to Kansas City, and they only had to pay the commission to the guy that sold them. And they cut out this guy that was buying them and making money off of them.
But the woodmen of the world were the only people who met in the hall.
Yeah, that's the only ones I know of that I can remember.
What about when they had square dances? Did your father participate in them?
He played for him and Milt Campbell. He didn't always play for him, but he played for a lot of square dances. Not only there, but they'd some farmer would just move the furniture out of his house in the yard in the summertime or in the fall after they got the crops laid by, and they'd have a big square dance and dance all night.
What instrument did your father play?
Played the violin. And Milt Campbell played a dulcimer. He made it himself.
And that was a whole band? There weren't any other musicians?
Just two pieces. Oh, once in a while somebody else would join in with the guitar or something, but most of the time it was just him and Milt played for the square dance.
Okay, talking about, you mentioned that people had parties in the fall after they brought in the crops. Were there any other kinds of festivals or anything?
A bunch of the neighbors would get together. We'd put all the kids, take all the kids and go down to the river and camp out. That's the Grand River. And go fishing, stay all night, maybe two or three days and fish. And they had what they called trammel nets and throw lines. And they'd catch a whole bunch of fish, and they had live boxes, and they'd put these fish in the live boxes, and they'd maybe bring an old wood stove down there with them and set it up right out there in the open, and they'd cook on that. And they didn't catch fish to waste or anything. They caught fish to eat. And maybe they'd take some home with them or something, but you couldn't keep them too long. You couldn't hoard it because they didn't have any refrigeration or anything. You had to eat it for cooking.
Were there any other kind of celebrations or festivals or anything?
Well, they always had the county fair.
In Trenton?
Yeah. They had a racetrack and just regular county fairs. They had motorcycle races when I was a kid and horse races and different things. And in later years, not while I was there, since I left there, out around that area, that's the biggest popcorn manufacturer. They grow more popcorn than any place else in the world, in the United States. Not manufactured, it's canned and processed there.
This picture, what kind of a festival, or what would you call that?
Well, that's at Shelburne Church. that was the church nearest to where I lived, and where most people went to church is the Baptist church. And in June, they had what they called a June meeting, and I forgot what day it was in June. But that's after the weather was clear, it was nice weather. And they had one Sunday, and they'd all come and bring food, and they had tables and stuff, and they'd everybody'd eat and have all of this get together.
Was there supposed to be any special purpose for this meeting?
No, just to get together, because there wasn't anything for not much for people to do. And everybody looked forward to the June meeting. They could all wear their finest, and it's like most people now on Easter and stuff, they go out to wear their new clothes and stuff, and that was a show off for that. But the older people got enjoyed talking to each other. Maybe they lived quite a ways apart and there wasn't much transportation, and then they could get to visit too often.
Were there other churches around Hickory besides Shelburne?
Yeah. There was a church not very far out of Hickory, and I can't remember. It seemed to me like a Dockery Chapel, but I can't remember if that was right or not, and I don't know what it was. And then the other way from Hickory, there was a Methodist church, but I can't remember what they called it.
You mean the Dockerys weren't Baptists?
I don't know what denomination they were. What denomination? If that was, I don't even remember. There was a Dockery Chapel, but I can't remember if that was it or what the name of it was. For sure, it's been long. I know there was a church north of Hickory, there was one west of Hickory, and Shelburne was kind of southeast.
But they were all Protestant churches.
Oh, yeah. There was no, there might have been a Catholic church in Trenton or something like that, but there wasn't around out in the country. There was no Catholic churches around there. And I didn't even know any Catholic people when I was a kid.
Then you didn't know Jews or anything like that either?
Well, they had Jews in Trenton. But you didn't have any Jews out in the country. They was in the clothing business and stuff like that in town.
When you were describing your grandfather, Briegel, he seemed to be sort of somewhat lacking in ambition. I mean, you described him as sort of relying on his Civil War pension and not going out and trying to improve himself. And if you'd like to talk about that some more, was he really kind of that way? I mean, why didn't he have more ambition to do more things?
I don't know why, but he just wasn't aggressive. He just didn't want to get out and do things. He got by easy, and he just, that's the way he took it. My dad wasn't like that, but my grandfather was, and my grandfather's brother was like that. He never done nothing. He played the fiddle and made molasses. Everybody used to grow cane and they'd make sort of molasses in the fall of the year. And then you'd have that they made cookies with it and cakes and all kinds of stuff. And everybody done it. And there were just one or two people around the whole country that made molasses. And they'd take the cane over to him and he'd make the molasses, mash the cane, or sort of juice out of the cane, and make the molasses, and then he'd either keep a share of the molasses for what he'd done, or he could pay him. Then he'd sell the molasses he'd got for making molasses. But those guys, they didn't do only what they wanted to. They didn't take nothing on them for them to live. They owned the land they lived on. And their taxes wasn't hardly anything. There was no automobiles. You didn't have the expense of an automobile or nothing. It just didn't cost much to live. All you had to buy was a pair of overalls and a pair of shoes a year. And you raised all your food practically.
You said your grandfather rented out his land. Did he rent it, or did somebody farm it on shares? Or
well, he had three or four kids. But he only had one boy at home, and he wasn't ambitious either. And I think they rented most theirs out. And I think he had 8 acres, and they rented most of it out, and then they'd take their share of the crops that they grew on it, raise hogs and had cattle or cows for milk. Nobody raised too many cattle. They raised enough cows for milk, and they'd sell cream and butter and eggs, and they got by easy.
But he didn't really rent it out then. Somebody farmed it as a sharecropper.
Well, that's what you rent it out to somebody on the shares.
And how did that usually work?
Well, they got 50%. If you raise corn, you haul one load of corn to the guy that owns the land, and you took one load. I always thought that was a gyp, but then that's the way it worked. Everybody accepted that. I don't know where it originated or anything.
So the landowner did okay in the deal?
Huh?
The landowner did okay in the deal.
Oh, yeah.
You talked on the other side about people raising hogs, but you didn't really talk about the extent of hog raising, or did they just have, like, a little place with a wallow, or did they have great big places?
Well, most people had 10 or 15 acres fenced off into a hog pasture, and it had trees and brush in it, so the hogs, some of them had ponds and stuff. But you couldn't leave the hogs out in the sun all the time during the daytime. When there's fat hogs, they die. And in fact, everybody raised a few hogs to sell, and they raised enough cows to have milk the year round and have some extra to sell, and then they'd have calves. And they didn't butcher calves to eat, only just once in a while somebody'd butcher one and then haul the meat around and peddle it to the people in the country, because you didn't have any way to keep it or cure it. But pork, everybody killed hogs and cured that for the winter, for the whole year. And and then they'd sell their excess hogs for money. And all you had was, you didn't have shortening and stuff like you got now. You had lard to cook with, and you had cured meat. And the only time you had fresh meat outside of when you butchered in the wintertime, when the rabbits, we kill cottontail rabbits in the wintertime and eat them. And then we had chickens. And then in the fall of the year, you had squirrels. And outside of that, you had pork.
Why did you only have squirrels in the fall?
Because that's when the young squirrels got big enough to eat. Because old squirrels are tougher than hell. And then they had a kind of a code of ethics about the wild game that they killed for food. They only killed things to eat. They didn't just go out and shoot stuff just to be shooting. And if you killed the old squirrels, then you wouldn't have any young squirrels. I mean, you'd kill off your game.
You said they fenced off a whole lot of acres for hogs. How did they do that?
Well, and originally they used rail fences, but then that's when they didn't have any wire, didn't have any money to buy wire. My ancestors who came over from Germany had old rail fences, but they were old by the time I come along. And we still had rail fences, and had rail fences on the place that my dad took over and started. But we kept repairing it. That was for the hogs. The rest of it had barbed wire around it for the cattle and horses and stuff. But eventually the rail fence just got in such bad shape that we bought woven wire and set oak posts and put woven wire up for the hog pasture. Then went at the rail.
When you lived on the farm, you talked about the chores that you did. But did your sisters have chores?
Well, I guess they did when they was home. My two older sisters, my only two sisters, they were gone by the time I got big enough to know what was going on.
Did you and your brothers then have to do what would have been part of the choice that girls normally would have had to have done?
Yeah, we done a little bit of everything. And the water well was about, oh, 2 blocks down the hill from the house, and you had to carry water to the house. And then you had to gather eggs, you had to feed the chickens, you had just all kinds of chores.
You didn't have to do things that you thought that, you know, if you had sisters at home or something that they would have to do.
We didn't do much stuff around the kitchen and stuff like girls would do.
Your mother just did that all herself without any help?
Oh, once in a while we'd help, but not too much on that. She did most of that. But women had the rough time on the farm because they had to work like hell. Because they had to cook everything from scratch. And they had to do all the washing by hand. Of course, later in the years, they got washing machines, but you run them with a handle, you run them by hand. But they used to wash on a washboard.
Yeah, I just wondered if, since your sisters were gone, if you or your brothers had to help out with some of that kind of stuff.
No, I can't remember of doing anything like that. Not too much, anyway.
You said that during the war your father worked in the railroad shop in Trenton, but you didn't say what he did.
I don't know what he done. I think he was just a general laborer, whatever they... There was a lot of jobs in the shops besides machinists, mechanics and stuff during the war because they moved a lot of... That was a division point. They moved a lot of trains through there.
Do you know if he belonged to a union? The shop was unionized?
I don't know. I was too small. I just don't remember.
Were you aware of anybody around there that belonged to a union?
Not at that time. Later, they had a strike, but no, that was after my dad left there. That was when we had a store in Hickory.
What did you know about the strike then? Who went on strike first?
The people on the railroad that worked in the shop.
Did you know anything about it?
Not too much.
You know,
I know that they brought in a train load of scabs or whatever you want to call them, and they had this train fixed up so that they could live right there inside the railroad yards. And they worked, they'd go in and take the jobs and they eat and slept right on these railroad cars. And then the sheriff protected them. The strikers probably would go in there and wipe them out. But there was only just a sheriff. They didn't have deputies and stuff like that. And he deputized merchants and bring them down there and make them stand guard.
And it was just the people who worked in the shop who were on strike?
Yeah. The brakemen or the conductors or the engineers, nobody wasn't on strike. It was I don't know whether they were trying to organize it or... I know they was on strike. I don't know what the deal was. But that was before the National Labor Relations Act, Wage Act. And they didn't have much chance. Because if nothing else, they'd throw out the army. In some places, I think the American Legion sent men in or something. I can't remember just about that, but there was some guy we talked about in Indiana that was the head of the American Legion, and I think that was one of the things that they done. But I'm not sure about that because it's been too long.
Okay, then maybe we should get back to when you came to California and what you did. You said you came to visit your sister.
Yeah.
And where did she live?
She lived on Newport Avenue in the 1400 block in Long Beach.
And so that was close to Belmont Shore. That's how you got the job?
Oh, yeah. I walked down there, rode the bus or whatever it was. They had buses there.
And then you went to work for the cement contractor?
Yeah, I went to work for a cement contractor. And that wasn't very far. I walked to that because that was... It was on... Anaheim Street, between Terminal and, well, it was the block on Anaheim right off of Terminal, and we put in a city block of sidewalks. There was a Japanese had a flower garden growing there. There wasn't any houses in there. And he grew carnations and all kinds of stuff like that, and they had some kind of netting up for, you know, to protect him. And we put this, and they had a little old house there. And we put the sidewalk, and I think we put the sidewalk and curb in, clear out that thing.
You said there were two laborers and a cement finisher.
Yeah.
And the other laborer was a Mexican. Did you know him, or?
No, I only met him when I was there. He got $4 a day, and I got $5 a day. And I was the one, we both shoveled sand and rock and cement in, but I was the one responsible for putting the right amount of cement in and the right amount of water. And that was a crabby old cement finisher, and if I got off just a little bit, he really chewed on me. But I didn't say nothing back because I wanted to work, and I'd never had a job made that much money before.
Did the Mexican know English? Could he talk to you?
Yeah, we talked. He used to gripe because I got $5 and he only got $4.
What did you think about that?
Well, I didn't have nothing to do with it, and I couldn't understand why. He done as much work as I did, only that he wasn't responsible for the water and cement going in there, but he worked as hard as I did. There wasn't really, other than that he was a Mexican and I was white, that's the only reason I thought they'd get by paying him $1 less, I imagine.
What job did you get next?
Well, when we finished that up, I guess it was between jobs and they didn't have any more jobs right then, so didn't do nothing for a while, and then I went to work for my brother-in-law's brother was a boss for the Spur Oil Company, what they call the tool pusher. That's the foreman over the drilling, in the drilling department. And he gave me a job as a rotary helper. Well, I'd worked a couple of days on a job like that before, but just abandoned the rig and getting rid of it or something.
How did you get those other jobs?
Through my brother-in-law was a driller, and his brother was a driller. And he was a tool pusher for the Spring Rock Company. And he gave me the job, and I worked there, I don't know how long, I don't remember how long. And then there was quite a bit of work going on in the oil fields, and when I got laid off there, I got a job someplace else, and I just kept going, and I got acquainted with more people. And I always worked and tried to take care of a job because I wanted to work and have money to spend. So that's how I worked. I never had any trouble getting jobs.
Is one of these the picture of him and the first crew you worked with?
Yeah, that one picture is a picture of the second well on Signal Hill. And there was more wells there than that then. But this was the old Sandberg number one. There was a small outfit. I guess they only had one well, and they drilled the well down so far, and they either went broke or something. They couldn't finish it and didn't get enough oil to produce anything. So the Superior Oil Company took it over, and that's when I went to work there, and we drilled a well on down and brought in a good well. And that was my first experience. And we dressed fishtail bits on that rig, all those guys weighed at least 175 or 80, 90 pounds, and I weighed 119 pounds. So I had to make up for doing extra work to keep things going. And I had to learn how to handle heavy stuff, learn leverage how to handle stuff to get by, because I just wasn't strong like that.
How many people are in that picture so we can identify which one it is?
Well, there's five men on a drilling row. There's a driller and a pipe wrecker and a derrick man and a cathead man, and at that time he dressed tools. Then there's a lead tone man.
And that's the one with all five of them?
Yeah.
And what else about that picture is important?
Well, this is one of the early rigs, and they talk about rigs being dangerous. You can see here that this chain wasn't covered. None of these chains in here are covered with guards or anything. And if that thing breaks, running like crazy, it'll knock your head off or kill you. In the later pictures, you can see these guards and stuff on here, and there was an awful lot of people got hurt. And Bill Keck started the Superior Oil Company, and before that he was a contractor. And they killed so many men, they called him Kill'em Keck. When I went to work there, the people around that I got acquainted with later said, "Oh, you're working for Kill'em Keck. You better watch out." And there's a lot of people got hurt. I was very fortunate, but I run scared.
Well, maybe we should talk about the other pictures then. Which one is next chronologically?
Well, I'm not sure, but I think this one is.
Okay, and that's the one with six people in it?
Yeah. And this is a well I worked for Jim O'Donnell. Lloyd O'Donnell's father, and Gladys O'Donnell, you know, she's quite well known, was Lloyd's wife. And this well was north of what is Pacific Coast Highway now, and between Obispo and Temple, somewhere in there, I can't remember. It was about a block north of Pacific Coast Highway. And there's five regular crew here, and that is a driller and a derrick man and a cathead man. I was the cathead man then here. I got up in the world. And the lead tone man and the pipe wrecker. And this other man that was in that picture, he worked on another shift. He just come by there that day. Or maybe he'd come to work a little early and got in the picture. I don't remember about that. But I know he worked on the same rig as, but he worked a different shift. Do you want these people? Now you can see these guards on this picture, in this picture, and it wasn't on this first one.
And
for the chains, for protection, for safety.
So it was safer by whatever year.
Oh, yeah, this was a lot safer than it was there.
And fewer people got hurt?
Oh, yeah. Not near as many people got hurt here as they did in this area, because they done a lot of things to keep people from getting hurt.
Like putting a cover on?
Yeah. See, in the beginning, they didn't have welding like they had at later. And they'd take pipe and cut them open, take pieces of steel and make these guards to fit over this stuff. And at this time, you didn't have welding like that. You had a blacksmith shop on the rig, and you dressed your own bits, and you had to make your own stuff in this blacksmith shop.
And by the time you worked on this well, more of the stuff was already made up and you just put it together?
I don't know how many years this was later. Probably 8 or 10 years, but they'd made a lot of progress in that time.
Okay, shall we talk about the other picture then?
And this picture here,
that's the one with four people in it. Right?
I believe this picture come before this one. I'm sure it did. But I didn't think about that then. This picture here is comes next after the big one. Because this was Rosecrans, or Athens. And that field opened up before this one started. And this is my brother-in-law's brother, Milton Scales, that gave me my first job. See, you didn't work for one outfit too long. They changed around when they... He was the two boss for the Superior Oil Company, and he was a driller for this outfit. This was a Star Petroleum. It was a small outfit. It's the only rig they had. And there's only four people in this crew, but there's only four people in this picture, but there's another guy in the crew. I don't remember where he was or what happened to him, where he was at the time this picture was taken.
That picture doesn't show much about the oil well.
No, it's just outside the rig. But that was the drilling well. We were drilling that well. And one guy got hurt real bad on there, on that job while I was working there.
What happened?
The tongs got away and hit him right under the shoulder blade and just knocked him cold. I had a new Model T Ford coupe. And everybody's running around there scared to death, and I run and got my car and pulled it up in front of the door, and we put him in that and hauled him over to an emergency hospital. He got all right, but he was bunged up real bad. He was off I don't know how long.
What do you mean the tongs got away from him?
Well, when you rotate, when you're coming out of the hole, you hold the top, the joint that you're going to take apart, with the tongs, and you have a rope on the cat head, and you're supposed to leave the safety line on there. Well, that got tangled up in the table, and somebody said, oh, take the thing off of there. And they should never have done it. And then when you unscrew the pipe, you turn all the pipe that's in the hole with the table with power. And something hung up in it. The cat-head man wasn't too good, and he let it get away. And the guy waiting there to pull that pipe back and pull it around. The tongs come around, and he got under the arm and the ribs.
Okay. So you got this job in the oil business.
Yeah.
And you decided to stay in California, or what?
Yeah. I wouldn't go back to Missouri.
How much did you get in when you started in the as a roughneck?
It was either six and a half or $7 a day.
It was even more than you got at the cement job.
Oh yeah, and you worked 7 days a week. And at that time, carpenters were getting about 50 cents an hour or something like that. So. It paid good money. And then when I got, after I got going, then I got jobs that paid as high as $7 and $8 a day, $7, $7.5, and $8 a day. When I got more experience, I could take the better jobs because the cathead man and the derrick man got more than the pipe racker and the lead tong man. So I wanted to be a cathead man because it paid more money.
What did you think about Los Angeles and all this stuff after you said you'd never been out of Trenton before?
Oh, I was scared to death of everything. I'd never seen a streetcar like I'm out here. And I had to learn all that, though. Just a big green kid. And the first thing I'd done, because it was hard to get to work, you could, when you worked in the oil fields, when I worked on Signal Hill, I could walk to work. But after I worked on Signal Hill long enough to get enough money to buy me a car. Then the first car I had was a 1923 Model T Ford Coupe. Boy, was I proud of that. I think it only cost about $400. And then when I had to move away from Signal Hill to work, I had a car to go to work in.
What did your mother think about you working in Los Angeles, Long Beach, and not getting ready to go back home?
Well, when I wouldn't go home, then there was quite a bit of work, and my dad had done plastering, and I don't know whether my sister or I would find out that he might get a job as a plasterer. So he come out here, and he could get a job working, so he went back and had a sale and sold the farm and all the stuff and moved out here. They all moved out here. He moved out here and brought my younger brother. And he plastered for quite a while. He plastered here in North Long Beach when it was Virginia City. They were just starting this.
They just left the farm like that? I mean, all those generations that had been in his family? And
that's the first time that farm had ever been sold. When he gave a deed to it to the guy he sold it for, the land had been patented from the government and had been passed on in the family.
But he could just leave like that?
Yeah. He did.
There wasn't any talk about whether that was a good idea or not?
Well, they talked about it, but I'd already made up my mind I wasn't going back. So I don't know how come they worked that out among themselves, my mother and my dad. I had one younger brother. Oh.
And so they moved to North Long Beach?
Yeah.
When they moved out here?
Yeah. Then when the Depression hit, I guess it was before the Depression. It was before the times got kind of rough. And building wasn't too good. So they knew people that worked in McLeod in the sawmill. They had a McLeod River Lumber Company had a sawmill in McLeod, and they knew some people that worked up there, lived there for years. So times got kind of rough around here. The Signal Hill kind of didn't have too big a boom like it was for a while, and there wasn't too much building. And the oil fields had moved to Lamita and Torrance and Rosecrans, and I was moving, still working in different places. So Dad and them couldn't get work too much, so he got a job in McLeod, and he went to McLeod and went to work, and he worked there for quite a number of years. I guess he worked there until he was about ready to retire, and then they went back to Missouri and had a little restaurant. And then that's when the Depression hit, and they come out here, and that's when I built the place in Cypress on my half acre, and they lived there.
Where was this restaurant?
In Jamesport. You got a picture of it. Hamburgers and hot dog is 5 cents.
Okay, so did you you got a car? Did you get a place to live, or?
Yeah, when they left.
No, I mean.
When they moved,
yeah.
I was living at home. But when they moved, I stayed at home and paid board and room.
Well, Greg was plastering in North Long Beach.
And then when they moved, they rented the house. They had bought a house. They rented the house. And I was supposed, they wanted me to board with these people because they didn't want me to go out and be on my own. So I stayed there. I guess these people were Catholic. And I was working graveyard shift, and they fixed my lunch. And I went to the graveyard, and they sent me sardine sandwiches. And when I opened my lunch pail, I couldn't eat none of my lunch or even drink my coffee because I didn't like sardines anyway. And then 4 o'clock in the morning, that wasn't too hot. So there was a little greasy spoon down the street, so I threw that stuff out and went down there and got something to eat. And the guys thought that was they got a big kick out of that, so they put a note in my lunch pail, please put in more sardine sandwiches. So the next night when I come to work, all I had in my lunch pail was sardine sandwiches, and this poor lady didn't know what was going on. So I was just a kid. I didn't realize what was going on either. So I went home that morning and packed up my stuff and got an apartment and moved. So that was that. Then I was out on my own. And I never lived home after that.
You want to talk about those other pictures?
Well, that's
okay.
Sequence. These pictures are when I worked in Wilmington. That was after the drilling. Most of the drilling was done, and there wasn't too much going on. So the company I worked for in the drilling department didn't have too many experienced men in the well-producing department, well-pulling department. So I got in that.
Maybe you should say what well-pulling means. Well,
well-pulling is maintenance of pumping wells. When the well quits flowing, then you have to put it on the pump. And every so often those pumps wear out and you have to pull the, or you get a hole in the tubing or something and sort of rod breaks and you have to maintain it. And you have to pull it.